Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Thursday. I am in the middle of an interesting week because I got to get out of town. I want to talk to you all about why I'm leaving. I'm going over to Finland. I am competing in Abu Dhabi. Yeah, Abu Dhabi and Finland. Just accept the story, okay? So Abu Dhabi is the number one grappling event in the world. And for a couple of reasons. First off, they were kind of the original. They were kind of the first grappling event. But then secondly, they only come along every 2 years. So there's a real prestige to being able to compete, more importantly, being able to medal win Abu Dhabi. And the guys just bought in really early. All the grapplers in the world, there was no carrot that needed dangled. There was no negotiation that needed to happen. When it came to Abu Dhabi, everybody just set everything aside and said, yeah, that's the one I have to be at. And I'll do whatever it takes to get there because whoever wins that is the best. And everybody, the whole industry just kind of decided and agreed upon that. And that happened in the 90s. And Abu Dhabi was first ran out of the city, Abu Dhabi, in the United Arab Emirates. It then moved. I think that had a little bit to do, if I remember right, with 9/11. Getting in and out became tough. Getting visas and passports became tough. I think that was some of the political reason. But at any rate, it started to move around. And I did Abu Dhabi once. I did it in 2001, and it was in Abu Dhabi. And then the second time I did it was 2003. It was in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and it's moved ever since. And I don't believe it's ever moved back to Abu Dhabi. So this year it's in Finland, and I always feel like I owe an explanation to somebody to explain why Abu Dhabi is taking place in Helsinki, Finland. So there's the explanation. I got invited to the tournament. Used to be solely invite only. And over time, there became a qualification process. So there is invites still set, but there's also qualification processes where you can go, you can win a tournament. You could be the North American qualifier. You could be the South American qualifier. You could be the Asian qualifier, what have you. And they also do what's called super fights where they just take two guys and pair them up. So I am part of that. I'm not in the tournament, but I'm working on that. My time's getting limited, but I'm trying to get involved in the tournament. And it was a situation where they basically said, hey, why don't you tell us this sooner? I was like, well, a chicken and egg. I wasn't invited to a super fight. Now that I got to be there for a super fight. It's got a maximum of one opponent in a 20-minute atmosphere. So if I'm going all the way to Finland, I'd rather get in the tournament and get some matches in. So I'm working on getting myself into the 218-pound and below tournament. I'm currently set for a super fight. I'm going to be taking on. So when I agreed to this, my opponent was, well, I guess let's back up a step. When I originally agreed to it and got contacted, it was supposed to be Laborio. Laborio lost his participation, I believe, because of an injury. Something had happened, Laborio not able to compete. So insert Frank Mir. Now I've got Frank Mir as an opponent. I liked that. I see the uphill battle there. But there's also a scoring system, and there's a point in grappling where size really works against you. There's a point where it really favors you. But there's a point where it really works against you, and I thought I could get on top of Frank. I thought, well, if I get on top of this guy, I think I can hold him here. There's an appoint system and blah, blah, blah. But I thought there was some opportunity. Okay, Frank's out. He has a commentating gig with the ACB, a Russian organization. Same date. Couldn't make it work. Frank's out. New gentleman came in. Leo Vera. Leo Vera won Abu Dhabi a few times in a weight class format. And I bring this up because maybe I'm being naive. Maybe I got to sing a different tune next week, but I'm really confused by this whole thing. Leo Vera weighs 170 pounds. Leo Vera hasn't competed in 8 years, and Leo Vera is 40 years old. Bet DSI, my own friends, my own company, right? The guys I back on this show every week and back me back. Bet DSI has Leo Vera as a 5.5-to-1 favorite over Old Chael. Now, I could be missing something here, but I don't really give a damn how good a guy is. They say he won Abu Dhabi 3 times. He could won it 30 times. He weighs 170 pounds. He hasn't competed in 8 years, and he's 40 years old. Spoiler alert, Chael wins. Go take their money. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the sport. I'm just trying to understand. How does a guy that only weighs 170 pounds get the jump on me? There's a point system. He's not getting on top. He could weigh what I weigh. He's not getting on top. I'm getting the takedown. So now he's left to submit me. Well, excuse me, but you weigh 170 pounds, young man. Why don't we just go ahead and take your favorite submission, let you put that on, and just start the match from there? I will then get out of that submission and continue to hold you down for 20 minutes. Right? Right? Isn't that the way this goes? Come on. 170 pounds. Stop right there. Don't tell me his credentials. Don't tell me he won it 3 times. Don't tell me anything else. He weighs 170 pounds. I dismiss guys that weigh 170 pounds. I look out for those kind of guys. Guy weighs 170 pounds. I look out for him. I'm 217 pounds. Lean, mean, and basically clean. 5.5-to-1? Underdog? For Old Chael? I don't know. I don't know about that. I've been naive before, but it's been a while. I feel like I'm pretty objective on this. Hey, I saw a headline today. This is more interesting to me than it's going to be for some of you. Some of you are going to roll your eyes at this. Cyborg, if Rousey wants to fight, we can make it at WWE. I know what you guys are thinking. I'm fully aware that you're rolling your eyes and going, I couldn't possibly care less. The days of those two fighting were many, many days ago when it didn't happen. And if they go to WWE, it's not a fight. It's scripted wrestling match. Yeah, okay. Well, that's what it should be over there. But I'm not completely against it if... I don't need to see anybody. I don't even like to see wrestlers do this, where they go in there and it's these two huge draws and there's anticipation and they have what's called the screw job finish, where somebody does a run in from the back or somebody hits one of the guys with a steel folding chair or any kind of screwball finish. It's got to be straight. And if the WWE came out and they said, we're going to have Rousey versus Cyborg and we guarantee you a clean finish, I'm in. I'm in on that. But stay with me. I'm in on it probably for different reasons than you guys. I'm in on it because of the politics that would take place in the back. In the back, that's where the fight happens. That's what's really impressive. There's nothing more power. Nothing in the world has more power than the power of the pin. Or as Jim Ross, when he came on this show, told us, the power of the eraser. Things can change really quickly. Politics matter. People are going to go out in the fight. Who's a bigger star? Ronda Rousey. Who's got a bigger future upswing? Cyborg. Ronda appears to be done. Cyborg just grabbed the title. Ronda may never come back. Cyborg's be headline of pay-per-views. Guaranteed. Guaranteed headliner right there. So now all of a sudden in comes the politics. You guys see where this gets fun. So they go in the back. They start fighting it out. Ronda says, hey, if I'm coming over here, I'm your ace deuce. That's the way it's always been. Cyborg goes, well, yeah, but that's before I got here. I offered to fight you for years. You ducked me. Now I'm going to come out here and do the 1-2-3 for you? I don't think so. WWE is going to look at who the bigger star is. That answers Ronda. But they're going to have to weigh that against potential. Who's easier to work with? Who do we have on a one-off? Who do we have on a three-off? Who's coming back? Who do we want to give the torch to? There are some moving parts there. I think that you guys will find that interesting. You may not, but I do. If I could be guaranteed a clean finish, I would tune in and watch that match. Not only would I tune in and watch it, I'm likely to watch it anyway. I would be excited about it. Put it that way. That's the right wording. I'm probably going to watch it anyway. Old Chael's a bit of a sucker. Likes to stay home and likes to have things to watch on TV. Okay, you probably got me. But everybody else, it's not quite so easy. Not quite so easy for other people. They got to have a hook. If they guaranteed us a clean finish, and we knew there was going to be politics in the back, it would get interesting. I can remember when Stone Cold was going to take on The Rock. I remember it very well. Two biggest stars in the business, representing different fan bases. It was a different approach. They had different fan bases, and they were both loud, and they were both boisterous, and these guys are both selling out arenas, and they're both, their T-shirts are flying off the shelf. And who's the biggest star? I mean, half a dozen of one, six of the other, right? So someone's got to do the J-O-B, and it's not going to be Austin. If you want his participation, it's not going to be Stone Cold, but he is taking on the biggest movie star in the world, who's The Rock. And if you have respect for the business, and he does, you have to respect that fact. So if you want to get the match and you want to get the payday with The Rock, you might have to do things The Rock's way. There's a balance. Now, Austin gets to sit down with the writers in the back. He gets to bring his argument. But he's full well what The Rock's is going to be. Steve, you're a big deal. We're both coming out of retirement. I'm the biggest box office draw in Hollywood right now. I get a win. Put your chips where you want. Let them fall how they may. All right. BetDSI has been in the business for over 20 years. They are an A-plus rated sportsbook review site. Guys, they have made a reputation on allowing you to get paid quickly and easy. They've got a mobile device. That's how I personally bet myself. If there's any major world or sporting event that you want to get action on, go to BetDSI.com right now or download the app. When you sign up, and it's going to take you way less than 5 minutes. I'll call it 5 minutes, much less. Use the promo code CHAEL25, and they are going to give you $25 for free, no strings attached, just to sign up, get familiar with the site. Learn how to do a straight bet. Learn how to do a parlay. Learn how to get yourself paid. Go to BetDSI.com right now. Use the promo code CHAEL25. Get $25. You're welcome. Now, I had one weird occurrence over the weekend. I'm sitting at home, and I've got FS1 on one channel. I got the big pay-per-view Canelo Triple G on the other. So, I'm pretty pumped up. Anthony Smith is going to be fighting Hector Lombard. Okay, go back with me in time. I love watching Anthony Smith fight because in many ways he's like an extended teammate of mine. He's teammates with Kamosi. Kamosi's my ace. I know all about this guy. And Anthony's got an intangible, which is when he gets in the ring, the guy looks pissed, and I believe it. He looks like he's got bad intentions. Well, you could say the same thing for Hector Lombard. So when you get these two maniacs like that in there together, there's something to watch for a guy like me. Well, Anthony loses the fight. How do I know? Because I watched it and he lost the first two rounds, at which point I clicked over to the pay-per-view. Who can blame me? I'm friends with Anthony's manager. We have a conversation the other day and he's telling me, yeah, Anthony's on this big streak, man, three in a row, all KOs. And I'm like, well, you know, that's a good attitude, aside from the fact him losing to Hector. So we go back and forth a little bit, and pretty soon I realize Anthony came back and won in the third round. So, Anthony, I owe you an apology, but you owe me an explanation. What happened in the third round?
I don't know, Chael. I really don't. I don't know. I seemed to come alive in the third round of my last few fights, and I seen Hector getting tired, and so I pushed him, and he broke. And he gave us the knockout.
Now, tell me this. Let me back you up a little bit. So, I mean, I feel very disrespectful for telling you I was into your fight, but I ended up watching the pay-per-view. But that's what I was up against, okay? There's two fights I want to see. They're going at the same time. Watch your first two rounds. Hector was getting in. He was scoring some shots, particularly with the leg kicks. And you looked a little pissed off in that second round. I mean, you at one point you were even yelling to him, "Do you know my name now?" This is after you caught him a little bit. it's so I can only guess what happened the third round, because I hear your point that you were pushing him, and you do come on a little bit later, and Hector's got a little bit of a story, in fairness, that he has some trouble in that third round. And so many people say he fades or he gets tired. I can never tell from my living room. I feel like he's still coming, but the reality is, if you go look at the numbers, the third round has bit him in the ass more than a couple of times. So, did he get to, what'd you finish him with, man? Pretend I didn't see anything, because I don't know what happened. Walk me through this.
After the second, well, at the end of the second round, I hit him with an elbow, and he went down, and he shot in really, really quick. Hector's, his hips are so fast, he's able to turn on a dime. And I ended up on my butt up against the cage, and I felt him. Oh, I don't know if I felt him break, but I it sounds silly, but I felt him emotionally drain. So I started asking him at that point, "Do you know my name now?" Because that's all he said in all of his media. He didn't do any media other than enough to say, "I don't know who this guy is, and he's a bum." So I wanted to make sure at that moment that I had his attention. During the entire break, in between the second and the third, I was screaming across the cage at Hector. And normally that's not me. I'm usually a pretty respectful guy. But I just remember yelling at him, like, "Do you know who I am yet? You know, like, do you, like, are you paying attention now?" You know, and I could see in his face that he wasn't prepared to deal with that. And I told him right before we touched gloves, before the third round started, I said, "Win, lose, or draw, you're going to leave here respecting me." And he gave me kind of one of those head nods, almost as if he was saying, "You know, I got it. You know, I understand." And, you know, I just pushed, and I threw a right hand, and we trained this several times. You know, Factor X, I threw a right hand, he countered, and I countered his counter with a 1-2. I did, it was just an overhand draw to a 1-2, and then he went down.
Wow. You know what? You painted me a picture there, and I feel like I can see it right now, but I have seen him do that, Anthony. Why is that with Hector? Because he's such a talent. You know, Hector is a rough guy. He's got an incredible grappling background. He transferred into the striking really well, but it does seem, if I'm being a fair analyst, that, man, that the last minutes of those contests are always a pain. Let's give Hector some advice, man. Does he come out too hard in the first? Is that what's killing him in the third?
You know, when we were breaking him down and I was watching him fight, I was thinking the same thing. Like, I can't figure out what the hell's wrong with this guy, because he's a monster. He's a killer. And it's like, why are you fading, you know, at the end? And I just couldn't figure it out, but I was just happy that he does.
No, I hear you.
When I was in there in front of him, I don't want to speak for Hector. I don't think that it's physical. Because he never felt tired. He never looked tired. He never acted as if he was tired. His movement never slowed down. His power never faded. And it's almost like it's mental. He's not built to emotionally go three full rounds. It was like once the first round was over, he was a completely different person, and he didn't hit any. His punches were just as strong. His kicks were just as heavy. He was just as fast. But I could tell that his thought process was different. Like, it's almost like he wasn't used to being there, or he didn't enjoy being there. You know, it was weird. I don't know what advice I could give Hector, you know, other than, I don't know. I don't have any advice for him, hey. You know, because my brain doesn't work like that. And I think that's pretty similar to how you are. You know, it's just, you restart the round and you keep on going. And it's like his brain doesn't work like that. It's like he ends the first round and then sits there like, okay, now what? Like, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, hey, Anthony, that's a real thing, and a lot of our listeners are going to go, what are these guys talking about? But I get it. As a fighter, I get exactly what you're saying. I know guys like that where there is a certain – there's like a tipping point in the time frame. And if we made these matches 6 minutes long, we could have new champions in every division. And if we made the fights a minimum of 30 minutes long, you're going to have a whole nother set. You've got some guys that are – they're drag strippers, and some guys that are marathon guys. And he is built, you know, when you just take a look at him, we look at all those muscles and that explosiveness, or even I look at his judo background and the time frames and where there was breaks in there, he is built like maybe a shorter time frame guy. And it does seem like the longer it goes, maybe, I think it's a focus thing, maybe he loses his focus a little bit.
It does. It seemed like he was, definitely in the third, it seemed like he was lost. And you know, I just don't think that he was prepared for that. I think that part of that's his fault, because I really do think that he expected me to be a bomb and that I was going to break in there. And And I think once I didn't, and then once I started talking to him and letting him know, like, I'm not going anywhere, Hector. You know, we're here. Whether you win a decision or not, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. And as he started to realize that, you know, he just, you know, you could tell he was just breaking and he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, well, that's a real thing, too. I think you did get in his head. I think your analysis there is right. And that will happen, Anthony, because you guys had already been out there fighting, I mean, at a high pace for 10 minutes. And the fact that you even had the energy, that was the first thing I thought when you were yelling at him. I thought, where's he getting this energy? This guy's got to be tired by now. And I saw Mark come in and he was trying to calm you down. And Dominic Cruz was commenting on it, saying, hey, you got to get him to refocus. But I thought, nah, I'm not so sure about that, man. Sometimes you got to let a horse run.
But yeah, that's how I felt, and I've never been like that in between rounds. I honestly couldn't even tell you what Mark Montoya said to me in between the second and the third. I guess there was a moment, you know, he told me this after the fact, but there was a moment where he had relayed a whole bunch of information to me and said, all right, you got it? And I said, no, what? I wasn't even paying attention. I was too focused on Hector. I could see his coaches over there panicking.
Well, you stayed honest.
They could see that he was slipping away, you know?
Yeah.
And I just said, no, I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah.
I'm in the moment. You know, it was one of the first times I've ever been on autopilot.
You know, Hector's,
I'm kind of an overthinker.
Hector's one of those guys for me, like, I'm talking about from a fan perspective, but he's kind of like Vitor Belfort. I don't know if that guy's last 10 fights have been good, bad, or he might as well be undefeated. They bring those two guys, and they're kind of in a different category. I don't really care what their result is. Hector brings something to the table. So does Vitor. They bring something to the table. If you're one of their opponents, and you just were, it doesn't matter if they lost their last 5 fights. You're going to train your ass off and take them serious because they are going to bring you hell. Now, whether they bring it to you for 15 minutes or they bring it to you for 3, at some point in that night, they're going to bring you some hell. Is that a fair observation? I mean, is that kind of what you knew you were getting into when you walked to the cage?
Oh, shit, 100%. Hector's such a dangerous
fighter.
He's
fight, scary, man.
He was. They said, oh, he's on a 3-fight losing streak. You're good. I'm like, yeah, for the guy sitting in the front row,
sure,
yeah, it's real easy to quarterback from the couch. But when you got to be in front of him, it doesn't matter who you are. It could be Chris Weidman or Luke Rockhold. Hector can beat every single one of them.
Yep.
Doesn't matter how many contests he's lost in a row. He is a dangerous guy no matter who you are. And that was kind of some of the intrigue to the fight, though, because I do feel like the UFC knows that. I think that they understand the kind of person and the kind of fighter that Hector is. It doesn't matter how many losses he has. He can beat anybody on any given day, and I think that a win over him, maybe in the fans' eyes, he does have 3 losses in a row, but to the brass and the people that matter and the real diehard fans and other fighters, I think it gained a lot of respect from people.
Oh, for sure. For sure, 100%. So, you know, you can't do an interview like this without getting asked this question, but what's next? I mean, when you look forward, and you have to, your name is going to move up those rankings because that is still Hector Lombard. That's still an Olympian. That's still a guy that was champion over in Bellator. That's still a guy that's got a lot of fans in the UFC. So, I mean, things have changed for you. Congrats. But yeah, what are you looking at?
You know, I don't know, Chandler. I don't want to be the guy that says I don't know, but I got 3 or 4 names in my head, and it kind of depends on dates and those guys. But I think Jocko is a good fight for me. I know that he did lose to Uriah, but he's ranked. You know, I think I deserve a guy. I think I deserve a guy that's ranked now. I think I've earned it, and he's ranked 10th or 11th. I don't know what Vitor is doing. I know you brought up Vitor a little bit ago. I don't know if he's retired. You never know. I think it changes day by day with him. But I think that a fight with Vitor in Brazil would be a real cool thing. I think it'd be another cool name on my record. And Uriah Hall. I think there's a little bit of history there with me and Uriah. I think that we might have to get that over with, you know, and have everyone stop wondering what would happen. You know?
Wait, what's the history? What's the history? I don't know the story.
You know, I don't know what it is with some of the guys in the UFC, but they just don't respect me at all for the most part, like at least the guys in the weight class. I was supposed to fight Uriah in July, and I believe it was New York, and he just kept saying no. It was like the date was wrong, it wasn't the right time, and you need more time. And I was willing to wait. I said, I'll wait as long as you want. And he drugged me out forever and then decided that it was like, I just didn't deserve it, apparently. And that really chaps my ass. And I know that Uriah is a friend of yours, but it really bothers me when people be like, I've been in this sport a long time, Chill. I've been fighting since my first amateur fight was in 2006, and I turned pro in 2008. It just drives me crazy when people say that I don't deserve anything. I've been fighting longer than half the guys in the UFC right now.
Sure.
it was a real weird moment for me. Me and Dominic were talking before the fight, and it was like we came up in the same scene. We're just in two completely different places in our careers, but we started at the same time. So it was, it bothers me. It bothered me. So I did pop off of my mouth a little bit, and it's been real awkward for everyone else that's around me and Uriah, because I think people can kind of feel the tension there. So it's nothing too serious, but it is something that I'd like to take care of for sure.
Hey, it's enough. It's enough. It's got my interest. I hear what you're saying on that, man. I used to live through that phase too, and I found it so condescending when people go, I don't know who that is. Or I never got what the point was. Anthony, I came up from a wrestling background. It didn't make any difference if you knew the guy or didn't know the guy. Whoever else raises his hand and says, I want a shot, you got to go take him on. And it wasn't even an option. If they entered the tournament and got on the scale, and you entered the tournament and got on the scale, and you matched up, if that's what the organizers of the event said, then that's what you went and did. I never even understood this. And when people used to dismiss me, and I'd hear that, well, I don't even know who he is. I didn't get the point. It's like, well, then it sounds like an easy fight for you. Why would you not want to do it if you think I'm an easy fight? I think I want my opportunity. I'm jealous of where you're at, and I'm trying to come up in the sport. It sounds like this is just, to me, that's just kind of how the sport works. And I can remember the same edge I had that you've got right now when somebody tries to pull that old, I don't know who he is. What does that mean? You haven't done your research? You're putting that on me? Are you saying I'm not good enough because you haven't heard about me? What exactly are you saying? And I mean, exactly. I remember being here. Yeah, it's exactly. Like, what is your message? You haven't heard of me. What are you trying to say right now? Because I can't help but think you're trying to say I'm not any good because you don't know my name.
I completely agree. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of your show. I almost never miss an episode. So I have heard you talk about you feeling real slighted with the, like, the Chuck Liddell era, you know, and you weren't able to get your shot. And that's kind of how I feel. Like, I kind of came up in a time when I first started fighting. It, like, I hear you talk about it all the time. I fought on a wrestling mat. It was just on the floor with a steel cage on top of it that was regular goddamn fence. It wasn't even vinyl coated. You know, there was times where I fought and the door flew open and there's two fat guys holding the door shut and the fight kept going.
Oh, that's funny.
And, I mean, I fought in bowling alleys, strip clubs, country bars with mechanical bulls in the middle of them during the fights. I didn't give a shit who it was. Half the time, I didn't even know who I was fighting until I showed up. Like, it's funny to me where the guys are talking about, oh, that's a bad matchup. Matchups? I never got matchups. I showed up. And they said, you're fighting that guy. Like, I didn't even know who I was fighting. It didn't matter to me. And so it's weird to me when guys say things like that. Like, you know, I kind of looked at Uriah. I remember thinking, like, who the fuck are you? Like, you're nobody. Like, you have no idea the shit that I've been through to get to this point in my career. I've had over 60 fights. Like, I don't give a shit who you, I'll fight. Honestly, I'd love to fight a debuter. Give me someone a little less known. I don't give a shit who it is. The paychecks are the same.
I love that you said this. See, I'm in the same boat. It's like, hey, hold, time out. We have a contract. We have a contract that we asked for. This is an opportunity to do. We all got what we asked for, which is our big shot in the show and an opponent in front of us that weighs the same thing. I mean, my goodness, what more could you ask for? Because I came up the same way you did. All those stories you just told, aside from the mechanical ball, I lived those same things. Man, I didn't give a damn who the guy was. Was he better than me? Was he worse than me? Was he worthy? Those things never entered my head. Does he say yes and I say yes, then let's go do the match. And sometimes they go your way and sometimes they don't. But this is what the competition is. It's not about being a bully and let me figure everything out and I only want the guys whose asses I can kick. And no, I'll go both ways on this. I agree you should kick my ass. I'm still showing up. One doesn't have anything to do with the other. And so this is just so refreshing to talk to somebody like you that understands it. It's like, yes, this is what it is. Your coaches go break down my tape and my coaches will break down yours and let's agree on a date and then we'll figure this out in 15 minutes or less. This isn't rocket science. Why are we overthinking it?
I've never understood it. It's never, you know, even my manager, Jim, has said several times, all right, maybe you should think about this a little bit. No, I don't care. You know, they called and said, how do you feel about Hector? Sign it. I don't care. Let's do it. It doesn't matter to me. Because if I can't beat Hector, then what am I doing here anyways? You know, the way I figure it, I'm chasing a world championship. I believe that I have what it takes to be the best in the world. The only person that matters is the person with the title. So I'm not even training for Hector. You know, like, we can do the game plans and all the other BS. Chances are I ain't going to do it when we get there anyways. I'm going to fight the way I'm going to fight. It's just how it's going to be. Every, you know, I don't even know who said it, but everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yep.
It all changes. I had a totally different game plan. I didn't plan to get kicked in the leg 30 times. That was not the game plan. But it all changes when you're in front of somebody. You can never really game plan for anybody because you never know what they're going to bring to the table. So I game plan for Michael Bisping, and I have since he won the title. That's my game plan.
Smart.
And that's the only person that that's who I'm dialed in on is Bisping and Whitaker and Rockhold. That's about it. It's the top three guys. Whoever may have the title when I get there. That's all I'm worried about. Anyone else, I should. If I think I'm that good that I can get to that point, then it shouldn't matter who they put in front of me aside from that.
So you bring up Bisping. Rockhold fought after you did on Saturday. He cut a promo against St. Pierre. He was kind of against St. Pierre's participation in that match. Is he right to do so? I'm on the other school of thought, which is, hey, George was champ. He left on his own terms. If he comes back, that's George St. Pierre. We stay out of his way. But am I wrong on that? Do I got too old school of a mentality, or are you okay with the fact that George has cut the line and he's fighting for the title?
I'm okay with it. I guess I can understand the argument that a lot of people are coming from. I just don't know how you argue with George St. Pierre.
There you go.
The guy's right. Done everything. You know what I mean?
That's still George St. Pierre.
Everything is the son.
Right.
Yeah, how do you tell that guy no? At this point, George St. Pierre can pretty much do whatever he wants. I think that he's earned that. And I think in order for you to be able to say something about that, you would have had to have done more than him. And I don't think there's anyone out there that can say that.
It's hard to make that argument. It's like, you know, and this sport moves so quickly. I'm aware of that, just like you and all the listeners. But I'm aware it's 2013, but he still went out on top. He cleaned out his division. He cleaned it out a second time. Some guys he started beating three times over. It's like, I'm with you. It's still George St. Pierre. If he comes back, he gets to pick his weight, and we all just have to wait till he's done. I was a little surprised at how much Rockhold was like, hey, Bisping's just going to kill him. It's like, well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think we need to see this match.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. It is very possible. But I think that's some of the intrigue in the fight. Honestly, it's one of those, I don't really know. I have no idea. It depends on which Bisping shows up compared to which George shows up and how much George has regressed over time, or maybe he's gotten better with the time off and the healing. I don't know, but I'm in. You know, I want to see it.
I'm in. I'm the same way. I mean, November can't get here quick enough. All right, hey, I was talking about something right before you came on. Let me get your opinion on something. Cyborg came out. Cyborg, you know, they're always dangling this Ronda Rousey's return in front of our face. And it's like, guys, not for nothing, but that gets less and less intriguing over time, not more and more intriguing. But now they're talking about Cyborg versus Ronda and maybe doing some angle in the WWE, which I think might feel a little more appropriate at this point. I feel like that ship has sailed. And I would do an about-face if somebody got this signed. I would do an about-face and start getting pumped up for that fight, but it'd take a little work. It wouldn't just be organic. I feel like that ship sailed, and if they want to go over and do something in wrestling, maybe that's where that should take place. What do you think?
I think I agree with you. The Cyborg Ronda Rousey thing kind of reminds me of the Mayweather Pacquiao thing. If they had done it at the right time, that could have been huge. And,
yep.
And now looking back, you know, maybe the result wouldn't have been as exciting as the build up to the fight. But I think after Ronda taking those losses, I don't want to say her stock has dropped because I think she's still a pioneer for women's MMA for sure. But I just don't. There's really no. I mean, what do you say? Cyborg's never lost, and Ronda hasn't won in a while. So I don't know. I don't know where you can. I think, you know, in order to have exciting matchups in MMA, there has to be some element of not knowing what could happen. And I think everyone's probably got a pretty good idea what would happen in that fight, whether you're right or you're wrong. I think we all think we know what would happen. So I think it's going to be hard to build it up in the WWE. It would definitely be something to watch. Would be a spectacle for sure.
Yeah, Anthony, it seems like as it pertains to Ronda and Cyborg, it seems like we keep getting in the same car and just crashing it over and over again, because no matter how much you want to talk about it, we end up at the inevitable weight discrepancy. Ronda doesn't want to go up, and Cyborg can't go down. So it just seems like over the last 5 years, there's been no middle ground. I don't understand why there would be moving forward. We're just not going to see them in a cage together, because no matter how much you talk about it, or the draw, or the money, or the anticipation, both of them have made it very clear, I don't agree on the weight, and I'm not flexing on it. So I feel like we got a dead issue there in MMA, but this is one that just won't go away.
It won't, and I guess I don't understand where it keeps gaining traction now. Like, why does this thing keep getting wheels? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, Ronda doesn't need to fight, and the only person that's willing to, the only person that can fix that is Cyborg by going down, and she can't do that. So if you can't go Ronda into the fight with a paycheck, and you can't cut Cyborg's leg off, I don't really see where this is going.
Yeah, I feel like it's always a miss on Cyborg because she is the one moving that ship forward, and it would be a good payday from her, for her. And so you can see where her motivation comes from, but it's like Cyborg, when they put a camera in front of your face, just take Ronda's name out of your mouth because that match isn't going to happen. So if we're trying to make up some dollars and cents here, pick somebody new and build something else because your days with Ronda, they're just not in front of you.
I agree, and I think the Cyborg's probably she's looking for a payday, I would imagine, and maybe it's not even so much chasing Ronda. I just don't know who else she can chase right now that's gonna build any hype or get any steam behind it. I think that division's kind of, I don't know, there's just really no one there that's got a whole lot of steam behind them, and it doesn't look like anybody's in a hurry to build a contender.
Did you happen to see, this is another thing that had come out today, did you happen to see there's some speculation around Jacare versus Weidman for later in the year?
Oh, man, that'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be a great fight? See, I'm hoping that same thing. Usually in this sport, man, where there's smoke, there's fire, and I'm hoping there's a fire there because there's something to that match. That match should have happened before. Jacare kind of got the shaft on it when Weidman had the strap. And now there isn't a title on the line, but boy, it'd be hard to say if Jacare won that one that he doesn't, you know, move up and maybe finally get that opportunity. That'd be fun if they can make that happen, wouldn't it?
That would be one I would definitely... I don't go to very many fight shows, definitely not very many UFC shows. So I got three small kids and family and, you know, and stuff, but that would be one I would definitely go to. I would make sure that I had a butt in the seat, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know what would happen. You know, does Weidman shoot his takedown? Is that a guy that you take down? I don't know.
I don't know either. That I agree with you, and not for nothing, but Jacare is going to try to take Weidman down. You know, he is one of those grapplers that's not afraid to hit a double leg himself, and when he gets you there, he's pretty tough to get off you.
Right, especially the way that he you know, once he was able to get on top of Yoel Romero. I mean, we've all seen how much of a monster that guy is. And it didn't seem like Jacare had too many problems at the end of that fight, keeping Yoel on his back. So, I don't know. That's another one of those fights. It's kind of who can impose their will and whose specialty is more dangerous. I don't know. That's a good one. I hope so.
Hey, give me some scoop on Camozzi. What's he doing now? I heard he's got a kickboxing contract. That's what he's focused on?
Yeah, he's fighting in Glory in December at the Madison Square Garden card. And, I think that he's got a deal in his contract where he can fight MMA as well. So he's kind of got the best of both worlds there. So he's just working his kickboxing and you know, I mean, you've trained with him. That guy's a monster on his feet. So he's kicking everybody's ass.
Exactly what I was going to say. When I spar with him, yeah, man, kickboxing with Camozzi is not a lot of fun. So I'm excited for that. I'm excited that he's moving forward, but I am kind of excited he's going back to his roots. I don't know which he likes more. I want whichever one he wants more. But I am excited that they're limiting him, taking the grappling out. We're going to see what his bread and butter is because I know, like you said, I know how good he is at it.
Yeah, in the rounds that we only do kickboxing are not enjoyable rounds for me. When they start talking about takedowns and clinch work is where I sigh relief when I know I got a round with him.
Hey, you're a good man. Thanks for coming on, buddy. Anything else you want to get off your chest?
No, man. I just appreciate you having me on and I'll keep listening.
I appreciate you, and congrats on the big win. Take care, Anthony.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, guys, you got a business? Let me ask you something. Are you hiring? And if so, do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? I'll tell you now, it's ZipRecruiter. You can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right person to your job better than anyone else. That is why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within one day. No juggling emails or calls to the office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post at ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Sonnen. That's ZipRecruiter.com ZipRecruiter.com/Sonnen. One more time, get it for free just for listening to this show. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Sonnen.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to PodcastOne.com and click on the survey banner. Or go to PodcastOne.com/mysurvey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at PodcastOne.com/mysurvey. Or click on the survey banner on PodcastOne.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Boom! There was Anthony Smith. Hey, that was a shoot right there, Jacob. I did not see how that ended, and I literally, that was 100% shoot. I literally got in a back and forth with his manager and thought, well, there's an optimist for you. You know, way to keep that good optimistic spirit. And I was kind of thinking, you know, Jim, this is getting a little weird because you're going from optimistic to delusional, and this is getting bizarre. And I never heard. I switched the channel. I read all about the fights after they were done, but I was going back and forth. I just missed that round. I didn't miss any other. I just missed that round and that announcement. I was right back. Boom. I was in for the main event. I saw Luke's walk. I mean, I saw the whole bit. I was clicking back watching Canelo Triple G, and I finally said, Jim, you got to call me. He gets on the phone. I said, hey, man, I'm being real serious right now. Did Anthony win that fight? Is that what you're telling me? And he's like, yeah. He's like, everything that I thought where he was being weird, he was thinking that about me, going, why is Chael acting like my guy lost?
Pessimist.
Yeah, well, that's why I thought. I watched 10 minutes of it. I mean, I watched 66% of it. I got a pretty good feel. Apparently, Anthony knocked him out in the last round.
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes. I appreciated his honesty, too, because standing across from Hector Lombard is an intimidating thing. Now, Anthony's an intimidating guy, too, but Anthony's on this three-fight streak. Hector's on a three-fight skid. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference. You got some guys. Again, Vitor's one of them. But so is Hector Lombard. He's going to bring you hell. You don't know if it's going to be 3 minutes of hell or 15 minutes. But he's going to bring it at some point, and you cannot take your eye off that ball. I thought Anthony was very respectful. I thought he pled his case and was very respectful as he did. A little nicer than I thought it would be, quite frankly. Judging a book by a cover, this is a guy that looks like a rough guy. He looks like maybe he didn't have the best childhood, if you will. Sure seemed like a pleasant dude, though, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He just came on and was like, yeah, I won. Yeah,
called it straight.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, he called it as straight as you can.
Let's set the record. All right, fight night's coming up this week, Chael. And we got St. Preux and Okami coming up. I just gotta say, it's a good thing your mom didn't actually shoot Okami.
Okay, you know what? That's an old story right there. I knew that was gonna come up sooner or later. Should I retell that story in case someone hasn't heard it?
You have to. Yeah, it's an oldie but a goodie.
All right,
I'll say it that.
All right, I gotta lay the groundwork here. Let me think of where to begin. My mother was a 7-time trap shooting champion for the Western region. The Western region is comprised of 11. Different states. I won't attempt to name them for you, but it's a pretty big honor. And this, she went against the men and the women. She was the overall champion 7 different times. Store that away. Yushin Okami was coming to Oregon and training regularly with us. I mean, he lived out here. I can think of many Thanksgivings, many Christmases we spent together. He was here a lot. And when he would come, he would stay at my mom's house. Well, my mom lives alone. She's a widow, so she loved it. I mean, first off, she really liked Yushin, but she loved having a big, strong man in the house. You know, she just felt safe. So my mom doesn't have a front door. She lives out in the country. I apologize. She doesn't have a key to her front door. She has a keypad. So Yushin had the code to get in, help himself. And then she's got an alarm system. And after you break past the alarm, if it's set, you get beep, 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 beep for 30 seconds. And then the sirens start going off and the cops get called and all hell breaks loose. My mom lives in the country. All relevant to the story. Okay, let's tie this together. So Okami was coming in all the time. Okami was a master of being at the Tokyo airport about to come to Oregon and send an email right then on my way to Oregon. So now, 11 hours later, he's front and center. It's about a 9-hour flight. He learned how to rent a car. He knew where the house was. He knew how to get in. He knew where his bedroom was. So he would send these messages, but with the time change from Japan, we wouldn't always get them in time. You know, sometimes he'd send this, you'd be sound asleep, You know, it's 6 p.m. He's going to board a flight. That's 1 a.m. here, just for example. Or no, that'd be 3 a.m. here, just by example. So if you miss this window or you're not at your computer, I'm a smartphone guy. You come right to me. My mom's got to still go to the actual hard computer in the office and bring it. I mean, there's going to be gaps in there. I don't know why he would do this with no warning. But he would. This is what he would do. So he sends that email. My mom doesn't get it. And he gets on a flight. He comes out. He rents his car. He goes to my mom's house. He lets himself in. Now, he's welcome anytime. There's no problem in any part of this story. But she didn't know. So at 1 in the morning, she's sound asleep. Beep, 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 beep. The alarm's going off. And she's thinking, my goodness, what's happened? That's the whole reason you have the alarm when you go to sleep and you live by yourself, to get alerted. So her master bedroom door sits on one side of the hall, and the keypad to turn everything off is on the other side, right across, right 2 feet. So he's there trying to turn the keypad off. She's awake and scared to death, and she's saying, who's there, who's there? But he can't hear over the beep, 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 beep. He can't hear. So he's now trying to turn the keypad off, but one of the buttons sticks. You kind of got to know how to push it. So she can hear that someone's fiddling with the keypad that doesn't know the code, all to make her even more scared at 1 a.m. when you wake up out of sleep and you're not really fully conscious of what's going on anyway. So she lives in the country, so she heads for a window. And if she could have got out this window, you'd never see her again until she wanted to be seen. She could disappear into cornfields. She's going to be safe as can be. She falls. Just like the little lady in the movie, she falls. And now she's face down on the floor. And Yushin's now knocking on her door. So she doesn't understand a knock at this point versus somebody trying to break through the door. She's just not cognizant, right? So she's got the beeping going on. She's got somebody's on her keypad. And if it's me or my sister, we are well instructed. When you come in that house, you yell the entire time, Mom, it's me. Mom, it's me. Now, this don't forget, not only is this a shooting champion, but she's a gun collector. I mean, she's got, if you want to get in, she's got M16s in that house. She knows how to use them all. I mean, this isn't the house you could break into, which is why my sister and I have been instructed. If you ever come over, and you're welcome to, you identify yourself nonstop, not a one time, hey, Mom, over and over and over, Mom, Mom, Mom. Okay. So when she falls and she says someone in her window, boom, she just goes to the closet and she grabs that shotgun that I was bragging about earlier. And now she yells, who's there? Except now she's not a little scared lady anymore. Now she's armed. And she gets nothing back, so she gives the intruder the universal sound that Hollywood has made famous, and everybody knows what it is, which is ksh, ksh. And Yushin Okami spits out every word of English he knows, which is, Yushin Okami, hello, thank you. Yushin Okami, hello, thank you. He just starts rattling it off as quick as he can. So she says, Yushin. She yells it through the door. He yells back, Yushin Okami, hello, thank you. So she goes to the door, opens it, reaches out, turns her keypad off. So this entire story that took me 2 minutes, it happens in well less than 30 seconds, because at 30 seconds is when the alarms go and the cops are on their way. None of that happens. So it's a really quick story. But now you have to understand, in Japan, they don't have guns, and that includes the cops. Are you aware of that? The police officers even
know that.
Including the police officers, they only pack a billy club. So to see a gun.
Interesting.
Yeah, to a Japanese person is a very, very rare thing, but it's a very scary thing because you only see them in TV, in the movies. And you only see them when bad things are happening, when destruction's happening. So she says he's not saying a word. When she comes to that door and she's holding the 12 gauge, he's not saying a word. He's just looking at her with these great big, huge eyes. So that's the story. And I never really meant for that to catch on as much as just, hey, if you go to my mom's house, identify yourself, you know, the way you've been trained to do. That story caught on. I told it to Dana White, who had it all filmed at the time I didn't know he had a camera guy with. So now it gets out in video. And then Dana's at a press conference. Yushin has some big win. And Dana looks over at him at the press conference and says, yeah, I'm really glad Chael's mom didn't shoot him. And so it just became something, right? You see, it just became something. So I don't like telling stories over, but if anybody hadn't heard it, it's an interesting story.
That's a good one. Oh, no, it never gets old.
It will never get old. Okami returns to the UFC. In some parts, because my mom didn't shoot him through that door. And in other parts, man, let's wish him the best. He's back at 205. Last time I saw him fight in person, World Series of Fighting, but he's at 170 pounds. So he's going 35 pounds up in comparison to my last time with him. I think he's probably enjoying that and gets to relax a little bit. But even Yushin on a big day never reaches 205 pounds. I mean, if he just pushes himself trying to bulk up, and who knows if that's even a strategy, but if he does, he's not beating 201. Not going to happen. So he's got a little size against him, but he's also got that weight off his shoulders. He can relax a little bit, focus on the match. Let's see what happens. Guys, if you are looking for a car, it doesn't matter if it's new or just new to you, use True Car. If you're at a desktop, www.truecar.com. If you're on a smartphone, download the app. Just go in your search engine, type in TrueCar. Here's how it works. Build the kind of car you want virtually. Year, make, model, color. Put whatever on the car you want. Mile, range. Type in your zip code. It will show you what people in your area paid for that exact same car. You will then be connected with a TrueCar certified dealer. You will work out the pricing. Most people are saving $4,000 off of the MSRP. Your price will be locked. The car will be at the lot. When you get there, you're going to save time. True Car. All right, Jacob, thank you for your help. Anthony Smith, thank you for popping on and setting us straight on what I missed Saturday. And all of you, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Want to know why Attack Each Day was on top of the iTunes charts in its first week?
What the hell's going on around here?
I ripped my headphones off, spun around, and flinged them. I turn around, and my dad is like 3 inches from my face. And he says, go get him.
Gentlemen, we're going to attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Brought to you by Podcast One Sports. Hear Jim Harbaugh, Jack Harbaugh, and JT Rogan share their stories every Tuesday on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, and podcastone.com.